In conversation with Fulata Moyo. Fulata Moyo can be reached at fulatamoyo@gmail.com. Eros Maria Melinda, Malin, Ando talks with Fulata Moyo on her journey as a faith feminist scholar activist and her work on challenging religious fundamentalisms towards gender justice. Please introduce yourself. Before I introduce myself, let me declare that in this interview I am not speaking on behalf of the World Council of Churches, WCC. I am Fulata Moyo. Fulata means that I was born feet, not head, first. I am a faith feminist scholar activist who interrogates religious resources in search of gender justice. I am a program executive at the World Council of Churches, WCC, where I work on building a religious women's movement and transformative masculinities for gender justice, as well as connecting awareness raising with policy-making processes at and through the United Nations. I was a visiting scholar at the Harvard Divinity School in Cambridge, Massachusetts, USA, and from August 2017 to June 2018, I will be part of its Women's Studies in Religion program, 2017 to 2018. I am a member of the Working Group of Scholars in Action, Carter Center/Faith Trust, a founding member of the Feminist Study of Religion Forum, FSRF, a board member of the Life and Peace Institute, Sweden, and a member of the Circle of Concerned African Women Theologians. My research and activist interests focus on how African women's storytelling and theologies inform the quest to challenge religious fundamentalism, especially its manifestation in gender-based violence. Could you please talk more about interrogating religious resources in search of gender justice? I was born in Malawi, and at a very early age, I was sexually abused. That experience meant that I was very isolated as a child, and I had to learn to embrace rejection as a power and to find strength within me. I had to find my own sense of who God is to me, and that was a God who could listen to my cries, who was sympathetic to women, and who valued me for who I am. This was in spite of the patriarchal one context where I grew up, where girls were not really valued much. So whatever I learned from theology, the making of God as a father, as a strict male figure, never made sense to me. Later, I joined the Circle of Concerned African Theologians, which from the time it was founded in 1989, has been working on research and understanding of religion and culture from the perspective of women, and that helped me. So when I talk about interrogating religious resources for gender justice, I mean that I do not just embrace religion as a religious person, but I always question and challenge the understanding that discriminates women in religion. 25. Have you experienced any pushback in terms of your beliefs questioning the patriarchal nature of religion? Yes, a lot of pushback. For example, I remember that I had applied to be ordained at one point, and I was told unofficially that while the church I applied to ordained women, they did not ordain my type of women. So this has become a joke for me: what kind of woman am I that they can ordain women but not my type? It is likely that those who conform and do not question who can be ordained. Do you think issues of religion, religious fundamentalism and extremism, and women's rights, including their sexual and reproductive health and rights, SRHR, are related? Yes and no. Yes, because the violations of such rights are justified by fundamentalist/extremist interpretations of religion. No, because if religion is a cause, principle, or system of beliefs about the meaning of life, of life-giving and dignity-enhancing relationship between the Creator and us as creation, then fundamentalism and extremism cannot be part of it. The reality is that the defense of women's rights, including sexual and reproductive health and rights, is inherently an important part of the ethical implication of what religion is. Religion is about life-giving and enhancing of dignity because it is really about understanding the nature of God in relationship to creation. When you look at it that way, then you see that it is the search for meaning that woos people to be religious. Therefore, since humanity was created in its diverse genders, including women and men, then it means that the well-being and the enhancement of dignity should also be inclusive of all genders. Sexual and reproductive rights are very fundamental to the enhancement of the dignity of women and men, so therefore, for me, religion in its very nature has to defend that. Since humanity was created in its diverse genders, including women and men, then it means that the well-being and the enhancement of dignity should also be inclusive of all genders. Sexual and reproductive rights are very fundamental to the enhancement of the dignity of women and men, so therefore, for me, religion in its very nature has to defend that. You mentioned inclusive of all genders. Would your view include other genders aside from men and women? Yes. At WCC, because of the sensitive reality of our constituencies, we still work with binaries of women and men, but in my personal life, I know that gender identities go beyond female and male. WCC has no official position on LGBTQ rights yet? Not yet as such. At WCC, there is a human sexuality reference group working on this matter, and there is also the moral discernment process dealing with how churches can sustain dialogue on issues that are still sensitive. However, since there are 348 member churches, there has not yet been consensus reached that can lead to a policy. LGBTQ rights have become one of the most divisive issues when it comes to the unity of the church, so like any responsible fellowship of a wide constituency, they are treading wisely, sensitively, and carefully. There is, however, an endorsed basic ethical principle, that the protection of the dignity of every person and creation at large is fundamental to any religion. But such ethos still needs a lot of conversation to reach a point of developing or endorsing a policy on LGBTQ rights. Some 26 member churches have clear policies, but some do not. How do you think can progressive faith-based organizations work towards being inclusive and pushing forward on issues like LGBTQ? What strategies could be used? Several things need to happen. The first is to identify the human face to the issue, to have faces of people rather than statistics. To create a forum or space where voices can be heard has been one fundamental step to take. We know that some of the resistance is based purely on lack of knowledge and understanding. It would be important to have a space where knowledge is shared in a less threatening way that allows people to go through their own process of questioning, accepting, understanding, and conversion. The second one would be to continue a sustained dialogue which brings together what, for lack of better terminologies, one would call progressives and conservatives. This means creating a space for conversation, a safe space that even those who are afraid of such issues, those with a definite stand for or against, can come to that round table or mat and contribute, and speak out about their fears without being judged. We know that some of the resistance is based purely on lack of knowledge and understanding. It would be important to have a space where knowledge is shared in a less threatening way that allows people to go through their own process of questioning, accepting, understanding, and conversion. The third point for me is the naming itself. Because you see, the naming of LGBTQ rights has embodied the foreignness and exotic language that sometimes is not very easy for those in some contexts to accept. In Africa, for example, you hear a lot that this is from the West. But if you go from cultural understandings and experiences, you will see that we've had these experiences in Africa for a long time, though they were not named LGBTQ. So the naming has to be interrogated. We should not always insist on particular naming because that insistence alienates the defense of such rights. What have been the impacts of misuse of religion and of religious extremism and fundamentalism to women's and young people's sexual and reproductive health and rights? Please cite from your experiences in the communities as well as engagement at the UN in Geneva. These include the following: religious justification for violence against women, patriarchal manipulation of ethical principles of obedience and submission as being virtuous, e.g., battered women advised to remain married to their abusive husbands. Religion misconceived as basis to harmful religio-cultural practices like female genital mutilation. Criminalization of LGBTQ community on the basis of religious laws and principles. Resistance and challenge to resolutions and agreed conclusions at the UN General Council and the Commission on the Status of Women, CSW, using fundamentalist interpretations of religious law. Sacralization of sexual and gender-based violence sugar-coated as child marriage, and the continued discrimination/exclusion and demonization of faith feminists and gender activists so as not to create dissonances in religious communities and not offend religious leaders who are beneficiaries of the patriarchal/kiriarchal system? Could you please give some specific examples of your experience on how religious fundamentalists challenge resolutions? 27. And agreed conclusions at the UN using fundamentalist interpretations of religious law? I've been attending meetings of the Commission on the Status of Women, at the UN in New York, and some of the human rights sessions here in Geneva. One year there was a question of the UN developing a resolution on family. There were so many groups, including church groups, defining family in the most fundamentalist ways. Some churches were defining the family as it was defined many centuries ago. I find this hypocritical when in reality these are the same churches where more and more couples cohabit before they get married. For example, when I was doing my PhD research, I looked at practices like the Catholic Engage Encounter, which is a requirement for heterosexual couples before they get married. I attended one such encounter. There were 16 couples in all, out of whom 12 were already cohabiting. However, the priest and the two couples guiding this encounter pretended they did not know this and taught about abstinence before marriage. I found this so unfortunately deceptive and a waste of opportunity to be honest and address the real issues at stake in the experiences in these couples. Fundamentalism works by pretending to evoke models that are no longer relevant. For those of us working by considering the current social realities, we have to find ways to interpret sacred texts and religion so as to bring liberation and wholeness. I have found, for example, the contextual Bible study methodology very helpful as a religious resource for advocacy. We have to strategize on sharing the conventions that exist, like CEDAW for example, in the religious community and find a language that makes sense to them. Sometimes insisting on a particular language is a barrier because people might be put off. So we have been working on that as well. What role do progressive faith-based organizations play in countering religious fundamentalisms, to ensure that human rights, including women's rights and SRHR, are achieved? What strategies can be used to counter the above? There are several good examples of strategies and campaigns globally. These include the following. Thursdays in Black, TIB, Campaign for a World Without Rape and Violence, by the World Council of Churches, WCC, the Lutheran World Federation, LWF, Christian AIDS Bureau for South Africa, CAPSA, Young Women's Christian Association, YWCA, and others. This campaign is rooted in the World Council of Churches' Decade of Churches in Solidarity with Women, 1988-1998, which was the Church's response to the UN Decade of Women, 1975-1985. During this period, the WCC, in collaboration with other ecumenical organizations such as LWF and YWCA, organized solidarity teams of women and men to visit each member of the WCC and listen to how women were experiencing the Church. Through these stories, it became clear that violence against women was a reality even within churches, and with this came the acknowledgement that women have their own agency, strategies, and resilience to resist and overcome violence. So TIB was inspired by several women's protest movements, including the Mothers of the Disappeared, who were protesting every Thursday at the Plaza de Mayo, Buenos Aires, Argentina, against the disappearance of their children under a violent dictatorship. The Women in Black in Israel, who went up to protest against war and violence wearing black, the Black Sash movement in South Africa protesting against apartheid, and the movements of women in Bosnia and Rwanda who were protesting against the use of rape as a weapon of war. TIB uses black as the color of resistance. 28. Development of gender justice policies as connected to processes of gender awareness and training. Part of the acknowledgement from the above-mentioned decade was also the reality of the discrimination of women's voices and perspectives from decision-making processes. As such, it became imperative that while there was need to change people's mindset through awareness-raising using campaigns and trainings, there is also need to connect such to policies that can help hold institutions and communities accountable to gender justice commitments. This has led to the WCC Gender Advisory Group process towards gender justice policy, as well as the involvement in an annual gender advocacy training using international mechanisms like the UNCDA, UPR, and UNSCR 1325. This also includes the critical engagement from an ethical perspectives to the SDG 5, arguing for a gender equality and justice as the more holistic jail than just equality. 16 Days of Activism's Religious Resources by the WCC, LWF, Islamic Relief, ACT Alliance, Anglican Communion, and the Church of Sweden. This has been a process of developing religious resources that use tools like sacred texts being read for liberation using contextual pedagogical ways, and of narratives and rituals in order to mobilize religious communities to respond to gender injustice and sexual and gender-based violence. How do you think can international agreements, such as the new 2030 Agenda, as well as human rights mechanisms, be used to counter negative impacts of misuse of religion and to also hold governments accountable to their commitments? WCC, the LWF, Islamic Relief, Young Women's Christian Association, the Anglican Communion, and others have been training gender justice advocates and women's networks on CEDAW, UN Security Council 1325, Universal Periodic Review, UPR, and Sustainable Development Goal 5 from a religious ethical perspective. This is aimed at capacity building so that gender justice activists can be able to research and write alternative reports that are used by the CEDAW committee to cross-examine government's reporting at that time, and can help hold their governments and institutions accountable. We have been doing this annually for the third year now, in July when the CEDAW session is in progress, because the participants can also experience a real CEDAW session reporting and can also interact with the CEDAW committee members to network with those from their own country. We hope to build on this. We are also exploring ways of bringing this training to New York during CSW so we can target more people. How can feminist groups and faith-based groups work together better to help each other achieve progressive outcomes? I do not think there should be a dichotomy between feminists/womanists and faith-based groups. I am a feminist/womanist and religious person, and the two sides are not exclusive, but mutually inclusive. I know some of the most enriching developments of feminism/womanism too have been within the religious circles of the academy and public, intersecting through race, class, sexuality, politics, culture, economy, and others. While for patriarchy/kiriarchy, the binaries empower the beneficiaries' individualistic greed and help sustain their hegemony, for those of us who fight such systems of oppression, we have to embrace more integrated approaches that are mutually inclusive. It is in our solidarity and pilgrimage of sisterhood, enriched by our diversity flowing together in the same river for gender justice, that we find our strength to overcome such oppression.